Might be the greatest of all the cowboy songs, written in 1948 by a guy named Stan Jones. This is the Outlaws version of Ghost Riders in the Sky, and maybe Stan wouldn't recognize his own song except for that vivid imagery and those lyrics still comes shining through. We're talking with Kerry Ross Boren and Lisa Lee Boren, authors of Butch Cassidy, The Untold Story. In this hour, we're going to hear stories, firsthand stories told to the authors, by people who knew Butch Cassidy and Sundance, who saw them after the shootout in San Vicente supposedly took their lives, and tell us what became of them, the various stories. There are dozens of stories about those two, as there are with many outlaws. These two authors have sort of whittled down the evidence and will tell us with the most accurate information possible what became of these two infamous outlaws. We'll be right back. So in the 1970s, in the mid-70s, a frail elderly woman named Lula Parker Bettinson made a trip from her home in Utah to here in southern Nevada to a remote location out in Nye County. That's Art Bell territory out there, and an old mine site called the Johnny Mine. And I was there a couple of days ago poking around. There's a pass up there. They now call it Butch Cassidy Pass. And although it's a state route, unpaved state route, the locals don't like interlopers. They put up signs that tell people to stay out. Kerry Ross Boren, you were along for the ride with Lula Parker Bettinson. Tell us who she was and why you guys made the trip to Johnny, Nevada.
Well, Lula Bettinson was Butch Cassidy's youngest sister. And although that she wrote a book about her brother, and in fact, I contributed information to that. And in the book, she noted a letter that she had received from a fellow in the Northwest announcing that her brother Butch had died there in 1937. She perpetuated that story to anyone who would listen, but she herself didn't believe it. She was convinced that he had been buried in Nevada. And so when we discovered information that his grave was there, she wanted to go and see it for herself. And so I met her there. We didn't travel together. She came with relatives. And I met her there. And we went up to Butch's grave. And I left her alone there at the grave for some period of time. And she was convinced of it. There was never any doubt in her mind that that is where Butch was buried.
So can you describe the circumstances of his death, when it happened, and why you believe that to be the case?
Well, like everything connected with Butch, it's replete with story upon story, which they told to deter people from finding the site. Lula herself made me swear that while she was alive, that I would never tell anyone the location of the grave, because she was afraid that grave robbers would dig it up. And so for that reason, there were several stories about how Butch died. The first was that he was working at the Johnny Mine in 1944 when an 8-foot pulley wheel broke and toppled over on him and killed him. He was taken out into the desert not far from Johnny and buried. In later years, there was another story about Butch having died at Leeds, Utah, and driven there to be buried next to the first person that was buried. So it became somewhat of a mystery. He's buried actually head to foot with the person who died in 1944. All the evidence indicates that the first one who died was one of his brothers. The second person who died was Butch himself, and both are buried there, ironically not facing the east as most graves are, but facing the North Star, which is what Butch had asked his daughter to do for him.
So which one do you believe, or do you not want to say?
Well, I don't think anyone is going to be able to say with certainty that either one is correct. But in my opinion, from all of the evidence, which is overwhelming, Butch died at Leeds, Utah, on the 12th of December 1956 at the age of 90, and was taken by car to the site of Johnny and buried next to his brother.
Lisa, can you maybe, well, you first and then Carrie, give me sort of a rundown of the witnesses that the two of you detail in the book who saw Butch and or Sundance after the supposed shootout in San Vicente, Bolivia?
Sure, I'll start first with Carrie's own grandfather, Coleman Bourne. He saw Butch and I believe Elza Lay, and he had gone over to meet with them. And on his way back from meeting with them, this I believe was 1924, his car hit a patch of ice and turned over and went off of a bridge and into a creek. And he eventually died because of that. And when he was buried, a large reef, burial reef with beautiful flowers and things showed up, and two men stood off from way off in the distance watching the proceedings of the burial of his grandfather, and it was purported to be Butch and Elza Lay.
And Elza Lay was one of the Wild Bunch guys, right? One of the exactly. One of the gang.
Uh-huh. Plus, you have the Bassett girls, Ann and Josie Bassett, Lulu Parker Benson, of course, herself. You have Alma Leroy Boren, a lot of the Borens of the Boren family, Charlie Krause, and Minnie Krause Rasmussen, who was well known out in that country. You just have in our book, we show at least three pages of individuals who claim that they saw Butch or knew Butch came back. And these were not all related to Carrie, but many of them were. But a lot of the others are independent people. And like I said, we've received many people, their descendants, confirming directly to us that it was so refreshing for them to pick up a book and read stories told to them by their own grandfathers or grandparents or other relatives that these things happened in their family, and to know that somebody has recorded this, and so there's many people, whereas you can't find anybody who, I actually was an eyewitness to Butch and Sundance dying in Bolivia. I think what's interesting is that the historians today, they think they know everything. How do they know? They weren't a member of the Parker family, and yet the Parker family says Butch came back.
Well, I've read some accounts by the folks who don't want this to be true. They said not even his family believes that, because they'll find some members of the family who don't believe it. And, you know, it's a big family. It's sort of like the family we're going to talk about later tonight, the Duncans and the Bracketts, who a lot of them had no idea of the true history of some of their family members. And I would imagine there are members of the Parker family, Butch Cassidy's family, who were not in on the secret and don't think it's true.
Well, that could be. I guess, you know, in a lot of families, when you find maybe a horse thief or something in your genealogy, you want to disclaim them.
But I think it would be awesome.
I think it would, too, actually.
Carrie, a lot of confusion was sown by the story of this guy, William Phillips, up in Spokane, who kind of looked like Butch. And there were writers who really went to bat for him as being Butch. He told people he was Butch. He went back to a lot of Butch's old haunts. And because of the physical resemblance, some people were fooled by him. He seemed to know a lot of inside information. Some of the writers who backed that story are now among the most vocal critics of the idea that Butch and Sundance came back, because they got burned. The guy kind of got burned on this story. Tell us about this William Phillips guy.
Well, William Phillips was an early member of the Wild Bunch. He certainly had a lot of insight into their early history. It mostly developed from the fact that Phillips got hold of a manuscript which Butch had written You have to go back a ways. Surviving members of the Wild Bunch all made a vow that the last survivors would write their story. And until everyone else was gone, they didn't want it published. Butch, with the help of Ann Bassett, wrote an account of their activities. And it fell into the hands of William Phillips, presumably because Butch had given it to him to make notation and such of his experience. And he tried to sell the story to Sunset Magazine. And in order to do that, he claimed that he was the author, that he was the real Butch Cassidy.
He kind of looks like him, doesn't he?
He has a resemblance, but it's easy to see that it's not him. And it's been disproven. There's certainly no way he was. But he certainly did have insight into the history. And he went to Wyoming, and he passed himself off as Butch to many people. And many people believed him. And so it brought about a great deal of confusion. But the story has since been debunked. William Phillips was not in any way Butch Cassidy. Phillips died in 1937 in Spokane, Washington. And Butch was seen many times thereafter over the years. And there was no way it could be the same person.
Do you have any paper records, any paper trail? Letters written by Butch, even under assumed names, that document it. And along sort of in the same vein, are there Pinkerton records that suggest that they even believe that Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid came back?
Well, in regards to the Pinkertons, I was a friend for many years of William C. Lynn, who was vice president of Pinkerton. In fact, he was the co-founder with me of the National Outlaw Lawman Association at Utah State University back in about 1971. And he went through his records completely. And I have a letter from him confirming that there is no record among the Pinkerton papers which closed the file on either Butch or Sundance. And in fact, the Pinkertons were looking for Butch, Sundance, Etta, and Kid Curry many years after their supposed death in South America. They never believed the story of their death at San Vicente.
So they sort of went along with it. Okay, if everybody wants to believe that, we'll go along with it. But secretly, behind the scenes, we're still looking for them.
Exactly. It was good for their reputation to believe that they had been run to ground and done away with. But at the same time, they were actively pursuing them.
And then the other part of that question was, are there letters that are written that you can show were written by Butch, even if under another name, to family members or whatever that you have or have had access to?
There are several, actually. One letter was written to, going back a little bit farther than the letter, after the death of Matt Warner, who was a member of the gang in 1938, a man showed up at his home in Price, Utah, and he admitted to Matt's daughter, Joyce Warner, that he was Butch Cassidy, and he was very distraught over the death of Matt. And for a couple of years after that, he wrote letters from Goldfield, Nevada, back to the Warner family. We have copies of those letters in his handwriting. There's also a letter that he wrote to Matt Warner many years earlier, recalling events that they had participated in together, and the letter was written from California. So there are certain letters, but there are others. The difficult thing is proving that they were written by Butch. There are so many versions, so many those who discredit it, that nothing can be proven. I had an old-timer once tell me that you can't even prove that you were born, so you can't really prove anybody's information.
Maybe you've had analysis done on the letters that by experts who offer opinions?
there has been, not by me, but by others. And some verify it, some don't know. But the majority of them believe that the handwriting is similar.
Well, after our break in a couple of minutes, I want to get into Sundance and perhaps Etta, and maybe Lisa can help us with that. But for the next couple of minutes, can we talk about Butch's life after South America? You indicate in the book that he traveled all over the place, or at least he told his family that he traveled all over the place. He ends up, as you just mentioned, in Goldfield, Nevada. Why it would make sense for him to be there? And I ask because after I first saw your stuff in the early 80s, I went to Goldfield and got old telephone records and asked people around it and trying to verify it. And now I see in your book you have a name for him, the name that he used there. But it would make sense that he would be in Goldfield in that general time period. Tell us why. Carrie, why don't you take that one if you can, and why he would be in Goldfield. I mean, it was an aptly named town.
Well, he had many connections in Goldfield. He had, in fact, become a member of the Mine Owners Association in Goldfield from approximately 1912. And this was several years after his supposed death. Both he and El Zelay worked as mine guards for Mervyn J. Monette, one of the largest gold producers out of Goldfield. And in fact, we have in the book, we have a photo of both Butch and Elza as guards of a huge shipment of the gold from the mines. Butch went into partnership with M.J. Monette in several things thereafter, including an expedition to Alaska during the gold mining years.
I should tell people that Goldfield it was a boom town. There were gigantic nuggets they were picking up off the ground. It was, for a period anyway, the biggest town in Nevada. And,
it really was.
Attracted the Earps and a lot of really interesting characters.
It did, and in fact, Wyatt Earp was one of the partners with Butch and M.J. Monette in the Alaskan venture with Tex Rickard. Tex Rickard operated hotels and saloons in Goldfield, and he was also the builder of the famous stadium in New York City, Madison Square Garden. And they went into partnership in about 1912 and went to Alaska together. So all of these people, they traveled in these circles. And when you tell people this, they say, well, you know, it seems impossible for Butch and Wyatt Earp to have been associated. Wyatt Earp was a lawman. In reality, Wyatt Earp was as much an outlaw as Butch in his day. He had been arrested. In fact, at the time he met Butch, he had been arrested for house burglary in San Francisco with Walter J. Scott, builder of one of the biggest builders in Goldfield. So he had heavy connections there.
Yeah, well, I love those stuff. I always believe that every great story has a path to Nevada and Las Vegas at some point, and it sounds like this one does as well. Carrie Ross Boren, Lisa Lee Boren, talking about their book, Butch Cassidy, The Untold Story. On the other side of this break, we're going to ask about what became of Sundance and the mysterious Etta Place. And if we have time, we'll take a call or two from our listeners. The Eagles, Outlaw Man from Desperado, take us into the break. I'll bet you haven't heard this song in a while. That's Johnny Cash from 1958, providing yet more proof that you should always listen to your mom when she gives you advice. Don't take your guns to town. We've talked about Butch Cassidy, The Untold Story, the book by Carrie Ross Boren, Lisa Lee Boren, who Butch really was and what became of him. In a moment, we're going to find out a little bit more about what became of Sundance, and then we'll ask about the most mysterious character in this story, Etta Place, who was with Butch and Sundance in South America and then vanished. In fact, we're not really sure who she really was, what her real name was. We'll ask about that as well. I've only got about 350 more questions, but I'll try to carve out some time for a call or two from our listeners as well. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Lisa Lee Boren, as you indicated earlier, your husband, Kerry Ross Boren, had dug up the name, the real name of the Sundance Kid, first one to break that story. And you guys have done a lot of genealogical work to sort of fill in the blanks since then. We, in your book, I think I remember this correctly, you write that at the time of the San Vicente shootout, where two guys were killed and people were led to believe that it was Butch and Sundance, that Butch was already, I think, back in the U.S., that Sundance was still down there, that the two of them were separated. And I guess that they were separated for years then. It was years before they got back together?
Yes, that's correct. And Sundance kind of went his own way. He sort of became a soldier of fortune in different arenas around the world and did different things. And in his latter life, he became kind of a religious person and a follower and of Omar Khayyam, I think it was. And so he went under the assumed name of Hiram Beebe in his latter life, or latter days of his life, and that's the name that he died under. Kerry was able to discover that and verify that with his letters from his sister that he had written to his sister Savannah, as well as he had been convicted under that name in California and served time under that name. He was the first person to discover that, and he interviewed the doctor who did the autopsy on Hiram Beebe, a.k.a. the Sundance Kid, and he was able to match every wound on the body to every known wound that the Sundance Kid had received throughout his lifetime, bullet wounds, etc.
Is there any chance to have done a DNA comparison to, say, the Longobaugh family?
Yes, there is. If there's any remains left, Hiram Beebe is buried at the Salt Lake City Cemetery, just east of the Salt Lake Capitol, and in Salt Lake City, Utah, of course. And if there was any remains left, and any of the members of the Sundance family or the Longobaugh family were willing to give DNA, a DNA test could be done.
But you believe, and you write in the book, that eventually Sundance and Butch did reunite in the U.S. years later.
We believe that they did, but we don't believe that they stayed together. Sundance definitely went his own direction, and so did Butch. But they did stay. They remained in contact.
And did, as I remember this correctly, Hiram Beebe, he died in prison.
He died at the Utah State Prison. As we said, that he had died under that assumed alias that he had taken on, but there's a record of him in California having served under that time and having written to his sister Savannah under that alias.
And do you have, we went through the whole long list of at least some of the key witnesses who said that Butch came back. Do you have similar statements that Sundance came back, or is it less substantive?
I'm going to defer that to Kerry, because
okay.
She's the expert.
All right.
There are quite a few instances. As Lisa pointed out, he did write a letter to his from prison to his sister in Pennsylvania to elicit funds for his defense. His sister put him in touch with their cousin, who was a lawyer, attorney, a member of the Place family, his mother's, Harry Longobaugh's mother's family. So the fact that Hiram Beebe had direct connections to Longobaugh's family is very evident. The Western writer, Harry Sinclair Drago, believed so strongly that Hiram Beebe was the real Sundance Kid that he came to Utah State Prison and interviewed Hiram Beebe and had proposed to do a book based on his story, which never got off the ground, apparently. So there are many, many instances that indicate he was the same. It must be said, though, in all cases, it's almost impossible to prove anything substantial. I know you have Jerry Nichol coming up later, and I know Jerry. And his version of who Harry Longobaugh is may be as valid as my own. But in my opinion, Hiram Beebe the evidence certainly indicates that he was the real Harry Longobaugh. When he was sentenced to prison in San Quentin, he gave the same birth date and birthplace as Harry Longobaugh. And so there's ample evidence.
Let's talk about Etta Place for a couple of minutes. You mentioned the name Place just a moment ago as being in the Longobaugh family elsewhere. Do you know what her real name is? I know that in books that I've read that the names of the Bassett girls, I can't remember if it's Anne or Josie, there is a physical similarity that, and they both knew Butch Cassidy pretty well, and maybe Sundance. Was it one of them, or do you have somebody else in mind, and what became of her?
Well, there's a theory that Anne Bassett may have been at a place, but it's a confused theory because Butch and Anne Bassett were lovers for many years and, in fact, had a daughter. And so it was easy to jump to the conclusion that they may have been the same. But there's no evidence to indicate that Anne Bassett was really at a place. At a place, I've been able to trace her story with some confidence because she wrote her own autobiography, published her own autobiography in 1928 under an assumed name. And in it, she tells a complete account of her life. And whereas she uses many aliases of the people that she deals with and such, as most of them did because they thought maybe members of the gang might still be alive, it's just a strong indication that she was an English gal. Her name was Laura Etta Capel. There's a group right now who are jumping on the theory that her name was really Ethel, because that name has been found in Pinkerton records. Pinkertons were notoriously wrong in most of their conclusions. She was, in fact, the illegitimate daughter of George Capel, who was an illegitimate son of the Earl of Essex. So she had very strong ties to the English nobility. This is proven also in insurance papers that she left with her daughter. And she signs the insurance papers as Laura Etta. And so we know that that was her given name.
And also, Carrie has a book, almost a completed manuscript, on the real Etta Place. He only has to finish about the last 4 to 6 chapters, and it will be ready to go to print.
Well, you're going to have to let me know when that's happening, because if you're going to look up Etta Place's grave, I want to hear about it.
I'm trying to get him to do that.
Do they have kids? Do you think Butch did have children that somewhere out there is a descendant of Butch? Same for Sundance, Carrie?
I think there are several. Butch was known to have had at least 3 different families. He had a daughter by Anne Bassett, who was known as Florence Parker, Flossie Parker in some cases. He was known to have had a Mexican wife and children, and he was also, according to a letter he wrote to Matt Warner, he was also married with daughters in California. And as for Harry Longobaugh, not sure about descendants of Harry's, but except in the one case, he had a daughter named Betty. She went by the name of Betty Weaver. She operated her own bank robbing gang in the Midwest in the 1930s, served a term in prison, and married when she got out. And her husband was a very good friend of mine for many years. After her death, he contacted me and gave me the family papers and such that she hadn't destroyed. She burned almost everything in the fire shortly before her death. But he afforded me copies of all of the papers and such. And the evidence is overwhelming.
I had some interesting callers. I don't think we're going to have time to take them, but they passed along some information. One of the callers said his great-grandfather was a jockey for Butch Cassidy, that Cassidy at one point had a string of racehorses in California, and the name is mentioned, Justice Lorenzo Hatch. Does that ring true for you, Kerry? Does that ring a bell?
It does. The Hatch family has long been connected with Butch.
Wow. That caller, if you want to send an email, I'll forward it to the Borens, and maybe you want to be in touch. Another caller says his great-grandfather harbored Butch and the Wild Bunch at his ranch, took money from Butch's hand for food and cattle. He found spent shell cases in a cabin where they supposedly stayed in Bear Valley, Utah, and found gold under the floorboards. Does that ring a bell?
I'm not quite familiar with that, but I've heard a myriad of stories, many of which can be traced to be true. Butch was very, very popular among the ranchers in the entire region, and he often stayed with them. He often purchased horses from them. Most of the ranchers along the way would tack a tobacco can on their fence post. Butch would ride in on a tired horse after a bank robbery and take one of the horses from the rancher's field, leave his tired horse in the field, and put a $20 bill in the tobacco can. I've heard that story told over and over by different families so many times that there has to be a ring of truth to it.
And the idea of treasure left behind. I remember in reading about the William Phillips stuff that he was going around supposedly looking for buried treasure, trying to find gold that had been left behind. You hear those stories in a lot of the books, campsites where Butch and Sundance may have hidden or hid out for weeks at a time, and Robber's Roost or that area. People go there searching for gold. Do you think there's gold out there somewhere?
There may be bits and pieces, but in all honesty, I don't think they left much in the ground. There's one authenticated story of them having buried loot under fence posts in Butch's uncle's ranch at Leeds. Brigham Young McMullen was his uncle. And they buried part of their loot under different fence posts. And when they were riding through the region, they would often stop there and retrieve it. In about 1945 or so, a little before that, Hiram Beebe came to Leeds and dug up the last of the fence posts, which sort of confirms that he knew what was there.
That's a sad ending, in a sense, him dying in prison after, I think, Lisa, you said he found religion, but he ended up in prison anyway.
He did. He killed a sheriff down in southern Utah, and he was caught and put in prison. And one of the things about him is that he didn't want his, like Samson, he didn't want his hair cut. And once they cut his hair, he had long locks of hair, and he went just down from there, and he just didn't want to live anymore.
Kerry, why do we still care about Butch and Sundance? What is it about those characters that that sort of still captivates our attention so many years later?
I think probably primarily for most people it's the mystery. Who were they and why did they do what they did? With others, like researchers, I think it's trying to prove where they died, what the real names were. Researchers like to go into great detail. For the general public, I think it's just the mystery that surrounds them. They were captivating characters, very unique even in Western history, and I think everyone hopes they got away.
And you know, for me, you think about it, our daily lives are tracked every single day. We're on camera, we're tracked by our emails, our social media, etc. Back then, you could be anybody, anyone, and do anything, and they did, and they got away with it.
I guess today the version is you can be anybody, but it means in the digital sense. It's online as opposed to in real life.
That's true, but in a way, you can still be trapped online.
For both of you, this story goes on, though. As you know, as Carrie indicated, he's still working on something, a project about Etta. So I know in this book you say, once this is done, I'm done with it. But, I mean, it's hard to let go, isn't it?
It is for me because I've been steeped in it all of my life. I sort of grew up with Butch, so to speak. He was just a household word. And it's hard for me to put it away. Mostly, I backed away from all of it because the new breed of researcher out there are very cutthroat. And they're not interested in history. They're interested in defamation and destroying the reputations of those who disagree with them and so forth. I don't want to be a party to that. And so I may not publish as much on Western history as I had intended because of that, but it certainly in no way diminishes my interest and enthusiasm.
Well, it's like you said, you mentioned about Jerry Nichol, who's our next guest. He has a different take on Sundance than you do, but you can still be on friendly terms and agree to disagree without it getting nasty.
I agree. Jerry and I have learned a lot from each other that we've been able to share that information. We don't have to agree. I belonged many, many years ago to a group of the older researchers who we formed a little thing called the Western Historical Research Associates. We used to share information back and forth if somebody needed something for an article they were doing and one or the other knew about it. We contributed it. We didn't have to agree with their use of it or their belief, but we contributed and we supported them. I miss that in research these days because now people withdraw from research because they're afraid of being assaulted in the internet and elsewhere.
I can relate to that. Well, Carrie Ross Boren, Lisa Lee Boren, the book Butch Cassidy, The Untold Story is an amazing piece of work. And I'm still going through it. I hope you'll leave your direct email with our folks there at Coast because I'd like to be in touch and talk further. Thanks very much and best of luck with the book.
Thank you, George. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. And as I mentioned, coming up, Jerry Nichol has a book called Bringing Sundance Home, Butch Cassidy's Partner, My Great-Grandfather, the evidence in his search for his family roots and why he thinks he is a direct descendant of the Sundance Kid. We'll take us into the break with Bob Dylan, Knocking on Heaven's Door from the 1973 film Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM.